criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Two women are picking up trash.
Just light it up here. No one will even notice.
How was I supposed to know there was a cop up the street?
Because you were supposed to be watching.
Look on the bright side. At least you won't have a record.
Yeah, not to mention the great workout I'm getting.
You know what your problem is? You don't know how to look on the bright side. You know what Lincoln said?
Leslie, call the supervisor.
Most people are about as happy as they make their minds up to be.
Leslie, would you quit the damn psychobabble and get the supervisor?
Why?
Leslie looks toward her friend's gaze.
Oh my God.
A man is lying face down on the ground. Later, with Detective Eddie Green.
Wallet's gone? No ID.
You thinking there was a mugging?
Can't think of a more amenable spot. One of my guys found a piece of paper with some scribble on it in the DOA's jacket pocket.
I want to get a look at that before it goes to the lab, all right?
You got it.
Neck was snapped like a stalk of celery.
I hate celery.
It's good for you, man.
There you go.
Body temp tells me he's a relatively new arrival. Dead maybe 12, 14 hours.
12 to 14 hours. You sure about that?
Give or take. No external wounds or obvious bruising.
Hey, babe, we're looking at a real act of God.
I doubt God needed his watch, cash, and keys.
Have fun. This guy's handwriting is worse than mine.
It shouldn't be a problem. Lenny takes my messages sometimes. I'm fluent in scribble. Looks like a to-do list. Pick up dry cleaning, photos, flowers for Susie.
Looks like Susie will be the one sending flowers.
Detective Lenny Briscoe looks at the body. The New York City skyline is lit up at night. Police officers work the city streets. The word law moves in front of a squad car and a man is led away in handcuffs. Detective Lenny Briscoe's tie is loosely knotted around his open shirt collar. Detective Eddie Green is neatly dressed and Lieutenant Anita Van Buren is in her office. The word order appears in front of a courthouse and a U.S. flag waves. Scenes from a courtroom are shown. Executive Assistant DA Jack McCoy is leaning on his desk. Assistant DA Serena Sutherland and DA Arthur Branch are in their offices. Law and order. The detectives and the assistant DAs walk down a hallway together. With Emmy Rogers.
No defensive wounds, no bruising around the neck, which was snapped like
like a stalk of celery.
Well, I was going to say like a twig, but celery's good.
So he went without a struggle.
Yeah, I'm thinking it went down too quick to fight back. Oh, and I'm betting that the bad guy was a lefty.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Now, I'm a righty. If I wanted to snap your neck, I'd go like this.
And just the opposite for a lefty.
Yeah. You cracking his spinal column was at a downward angle like this.
Now, if you can only tell us what he was doing in the park.
What makes you think I can't? He was found face down, right?
Yeah.
Blood pooled in the posterior cavities, so unless this guy was able to defy gravity...
He was killed somewhere else and then dumped.
Damn litter of bugs.
Any identifying marks?
You mean something like this?
She pulls back a sheet to reveal a large dragon tattoo on the victim's back. Ralph's body art.
So I'm a few days late renewing my license. I still run a kosher shop.
Mr. Pena, that ain't why we're here.
It fits that parole thing.
Ralph, maybe you ought to keep your mouth shut before you talk yourself into a felony.
Come on, we need your expertise.
Yeah? Always wanted to be an expert witness.
Don't jump the gun, huh? What about this guy? Is he one of your clients?
Never seen him.
Lenny shows him photos.
What about this tattoo?
Nice work. Only one guy who does flames like that. Name's Hades.
You got a real name?
I thought that was it.
Where can we find the artist known as Hades?
Dry artist formerly known as Hades. He's dead. He died in a motorcycle accident 2 months ago.
Okay, how about this? Does this have any special meaning?
I don't do Japanese. Nah, two tours. I know it's not the same, but I still get spooked.
Later, Lenny and Eddie are with another detective.
And what's in it for me?
Well, that cup of coffee is as good as it's gonna get.
Partner, he only calls when he wants something cheap.
Yeah, but I have your number on speed dial, detective.
A photo shows a tattoo shaped like a Japanese character.
Ike. It means live.
Okay, that solves it.
Not so fast, sport. Ike is also short for Ikedo. It's a last name. Ike is a nickname, you know, like Sully for Sullivan or Fitzy for Fitzgerald. Plus, it has a double meaning.
Yeah, can I have the number for Susie Ikedo in Manhattan? S. I-K-E-D-O.
Smart guy, my partner, huh?
That's it.
Later, Susie has the victim's photo.
Norman Pratt. He proposed to me a month ago.
He was saving up to buy me a real ring. Said he couldn't wait till he had the money to ask me. Made me promise I'd wear this.
She's wearing a homemade ring.
We're sorry, Miss Cicado. Do you know of anyone that would want to hurt your fiancé?
I can't think of anyone.
Any friends of his you might have had a falling out with?
Norman was a recovering addict, so some of his acquaintances
weren't exactly model citizens.
But I don't think any of them would want to hurt him.
Is there a chance that Norman started using again?
He's been clean almost a year. He's got a really good program, a good job. He put his life back together.
What kind of work was he doing?
He's a limo driver. He was driving last night, too. At least, that's what he told me.
Later, with Norman's boss.
So what if Norman was out of rehab? I got an ex-con working as a mechanic. If I don't give these kids jobs, who will?
Hey, no job. We all know what happens.
Hey, I'm just doing my part.
So we can assume that Norman Pratt was a good worker.
No complaints?
Lenny shows him the morgue photo.
Oh, jeez. Really like this kid.
You weren't concerned when he didn't show up for work this morning?
Well, why would I even notice?
Well, he has one of your cars, right?
Yeah, it was an overnight to Atlantic City.
And?
Sorry, we guarantee confidentiality.
Mr. Bosford, Norman Pratt was murdered last night. Do I really have to tell you?
All right, of course. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. Good kid like that. I'll get you the routing sheet.
Bosford takes a clipboard from a wall and hands it to Lenny.
Kevin Salibi.
As in Kevin Salibi, the baseball player.
He uses us all the time. Norm always drove him. I always gave him the plum assignments.
Apartment of Kevin Salibi. A bat is in a glass case.
That's the one I hit my first dinger with.
Wow. I figured you'd have kept using it till it cracked.
Yeah, I would have, but I struck out the next 10 times at bat. You know something about me and a major league slider.
Well, you finally figured it out.
You dance, or you go home, right? So, what can I do you gentlemen for?
We have some questions about Norman Pratt.
Good guy.
Past tense, Kevin. He was murdered.
Wow. I mean, he was just with us last night.
Us?
My agent, Martin Stanley, and my cousin, Davey. We went down to Atlantic City.
What time did you get back?
Norman dropped me off around midnight. I think I couldn't be too sure.
I thought you booked an overnight.
Lost a little quicker than we expected.
You hear that?
Damn, poor Norman. He had a girlfriend, a fiance somewhere.
Yeah, we spoke to her already.
So you and Norman were pretty friendly?
He was cool. No, didn't hassle me for balls, autographs, stuff like that. We got to know each other after a while, sure.
He say anything about any enemies?
No. Norman was the kind of guy who always wanted to help out. He said if there's anything I want, just ask.
What did he mean by that?
Hey, I'm just a hick from North Dakota. I don't want to embarrass myself.
Hey, wasn't Maris from North Dakota?
I got a signed picture on my wall.
At the station with Van Buren.
What is it with the male of the species?
You got a couple of months?
Well, I'm referring to how you could just about melt in front of a guy who could hit a ball with a bat.
All I said was if the kid stays healthy, he's a lock for Cooperstown.
Yeah, only it's how you said it.
How'd I say it?
Like a 6-year-old talking about a banana split.
Lenny smiles.
Oh, please, like you're any better. Maybe he'll sign his rookie card for me.
Now, see, that was a business proposition. That rookie card could put my grandchildren through medical school.
Moving right along. Salibi and friends were the last guys to see Pratt alive, right?
Oh, ain't no way.
Emmy said the doer was a lefty. What side of the plate does Salibi bat from?
30% of the league bats lefty.
And that don't include switch hitters.
Okay, if not Salibi, then who?
He did say Norman Pratt bragged he could get his hands on anything.
Like what?
Maybe his fiancé will know.
I told you, Norman was off the stuff.
We're not saying that he was using, but what if some of his passengers wanted something?
He wasn't a pusher, if that's what you're hinting at.
No, not a pusher, an accommodator.
Look, that ring he was going to buy you, a couple of extra bucks wouldn't have hurt the cause.
He's dead. How can you slander him like this?
Because it might help us find out why he's dead, Susie.
Susie looks from Lenny to Eddie.
There was a guy he used to buy meth from. Ellery. Roger Ellery. Norman called him Doc. But they haven't seen each other since Norman got out of rehab.
In an apartment.
I'm a doctor.
That's why he called me Doc.
Miss your office?
That's right.
Sort of a Marcus Welby thing, huh? Make a lot of house calls?
I'm a PhD in chemistry.
Yeah, I can guess what kind of chemicals you cook up.
You can go now.
Lenny, what'd you think the good doctor got brewing back here?
Beats me.
On my way to the can, I'll take a look.
You guys are funny. I hear there's an opening at Caroline's.
Yeah, we'd check it out, but we're getting our laughs working a homicide.
We don't care what you're selling, Doc.
Eddie walks toward Ellery.
Sure, I knew Norman Pratt. Yeah, I sold him crystal meth, crack sometimes, but I'm not into that anymore.
What are you into?
Oxymethylone. It's an anabolic steroid.
You mean like the kind that athletes ain't supposed to be using?
Athletes like Kevin Salibi?
Norman might have mentioned his name.
Shortly after, Lenny and Eddie are outside.
Now they'll have to put an asterisk next to his name in the record books.
Just like his idol.
Makes it harder to believe the Babe hit 60 on hot dogs and beer during a 154-game season.
In my book, he deserves an asterisk, too.
Babe Ruth?
He never faced Satchel, did he?
Oh,
yeah, Green. We're 5 minutes away. They found Pat's limo. All right, we'll talk to you.
With a police officer.
Vehicle was sticking out into the lane like 3 feet, like this was his own personal driveway.
What time did you find it?
Wrote the ticket at 11:10. Just got your APB. Called CSU to pop the locks, dust for prints, whatnot.
Nice work, officer.
Okay, tell me you found a signed confession.
Other than by a million prints, this baby's clean.
Hey, Lenny, it says here that when Norm took the car out, the odometer read 11,622 miles.
So?
Well, now it reads 11,629.
So either they moved Atlantic City a whole lot closer.
Or Salibi and his posse never left Manhattan.
That asterisk is getting bigger as we speak.
Later, Kevin is lifting weights near a rooftop pool.
Okay, it's not like it's a secret.
Well, it's not exactly public knowledge either.
The guys know. Hell, most of them are on it too.
Yeah, but most of them don't have a driver that ended up dead in the park.
He stops lifting, then sets his barbell down.
Look, I told you what I knew.
Yeah, the trouble is, we like fact, not fiction.
Screw you.
Oh, that kind of attitude's not going to get you on a Wheaties box, Kev.
We know you didn't go to Atlantic City, Kevin.
Oh, and that means I killed Norman?
No, but it means that you lied to us.
Yeah, and that kind of puts a dent in your credibility.
Look, I got an image to protect, all right? Martin, my agent, he was going to get us some girls, you know, pros.
Now, why the hell would you need a pro?
Because they don't want anything from me. It's not like they're going to accidentally get pregnant or tell some judge that I promised to take care of them for the rest of their lives. We were at a small hotel, the Scott House, over in the 60s, East Side.
Well, if you wanted to party, wouldn't it have been easier here?
Call girls have been known to become stalkers. I prefer not to give up my address.
We're going to need the names of those girls.
I can't. I mean, Martin never called them. A photographer followed us in the hotel, so we just stayed there, got drunk, and watched the Knicks game. And then we went home. Look, talk to Martin. I swear, I don't know what happened to Norman.
Office of Martin Stanley, 847 7th Avenue.
You don't know the headaches these kids have to live with.
I guess 10, 20 million a year helps ease the pain.
90% of them would do it for free. But like anything in this world, there's a price. Women throwing themselves at you nonstop, not because of who you are, but because of what you do.
And what you got in the bank.
Exactly. Kev's from a place called Rugby. There are more people in this building than in all of Rugby, but he's got a head on his shoulders. He saw what happened to guys like Sean Kemp. Kids in every NBA port.
So you keep his nose clean?
That's right. I mean, he's human, he has needs.
All right, how about you give us a rundown of Tuesday night's festivities?
Sure. Kev picked me up about, I don't know, 7:30. No, 7:45.
And Norman was driving a limo.
Davey was also in the car.
That's Kevin's cousin?
David Arcus, that's right. Pretty good pitcher until his rotator cuff went on the permanent fritz. He's finishing college over at Manhattan.
Good for him.
Right, why would you care? You just want to know when we got to the Scott House. There was a little traffic. I'd say we got there about 8:20.
Did you go right up to the room?
Unfortunately, we saw someone Davey thought he recognized from the Daily News. So we went to the bar. He followed us in. About 9:10, I went upstairs. 10 minutes later, Kev came up. About 10 minutes after that, Davey joined us. We ordered a bottle of Jack and watched the game. About 11:45, we decided to call it a night. I was dropped off first, about 10 after. That was our night.
Manhattan, Westmont University.
So you kept telling me about Norman. It's a real kick in the ass.
We wanted to ask you some questions about Tuesday night.
Sure. We arrived at the hotel about 8:20. Then I saw some dude who hung around batting practice all the time.
A reporter?
A photographer, more likely. Kevin could take a chance, so then we went into the bar.
Oh, sure. No image problem there, huh?
Davey looks at Eddie, then looks down.
About 10 after 9, Martin went up to the room. 10 minutes later, Kevin pretended to take a leak, and he snuck up. And 10 minutes after that, I went up. Then we ordered a bottle, and we watched the game.
Sounds like fun. What were you drinking?
Jack Daniels. We left the hotel at 11:45. Kev dropped Martin off at home first, and then he dropped me off at about 12:30. And then I went to bed.
Got some memory you got that, David.
He looks from Eddie to Lenny.
You know, back in rugby, Kev once found a buck with a broken leg when he was out hiking. He carried it on his back to the vet for over 2 miles. He wouldn't hurt anyone. So I got psych in 5.
Thanks.
Davey walks away.
Well, they certainly have their stories straight.
A little too straight, don't you think?
Oh, come on. Last night I brushed my teeth at 11:47.
Let's go see what's going on with Salibi's Lutz.
At the station.
A buck? You're kidding.
I don't think he meant to spend any kind.
Well, whatever happened to the good old cherry tree story?
That's better than I told you so.
Okay, when was it you first showed up at Salibi's apartment?
Yesterday, about 5:30.
It's been about 20 minutes, did you?
That's about right.
Well, at 5:57, Salibi called his agent, talked for about 10 minutes, hung up and dialed the cell phone of someone named Arcus.
That's Salibi's cousin, the memory expert.
And the night of the murder, your hero called the agent's cell at 8:36.
Yeah, when he was supposed to be at the hotel bar.
At the hotel bar, a waiter clears some dirty glasses.
We happen to be very discreet here.
Serve drinks to a lot of big shots, do you?
You see, I'm not going to answer that.
Look, we're only interested in one big shot, sir. If you don't want to talk about it here, we can always drag you down to the squad room.
After we make quite a scene out in the lobby, so the boss doesn't miss a word.
Discreetly, of course.
Well, of course, the big cheese might not understand, and you might wind up discreetly pounding the pavement.
What?
Kevin Salibi, the baseball player.
Yeah, I know who he is. What about him?
What time did he get here Tuesday night?
I don't know. Maybe 8:30.
That's funny, because he told us he didn't get here till almost 10 o'clock.
Oh, now you expect me to change my story. Very clever.
Well, for cops.
I'm sticking with 8:30, thank you.
He walks away. Later, they're walking out of the hotel.
This guy got to everybody.
Or he was telling the truth if somebody else used the phone in his house.
Oh. Eddie takes out his cell phone.
Yeah.
Lenny approaches a doorman.
Excuse me. You know Kevin Salibi?
Who doesn't?
Eddie, what's up?
Tuesday night, when he showed up here with his buddies, did you happen to get a good look at his driver?
Why would I look at a cabin?
Okay, thanks, Lou.
Later.
That whole tell the truth thing? Forget about it. Lou ran all the LUDs on the cell phones. 9:17, the night of the murder. The agent made a phone call to 911 on his cell, hung up before he said anything.
I wonder if that had anything to do with Kevin showing up here in a cab without Norman. Tails, I talked to the agent.
Lenny flips a coin.
I made a mistake.
With Martin.
I meant to dial 411.
From the bar at the hotel.
That's right. Check the phone records.
I did.
So you saw I called information right after the slip-up?
I did. I also saw that you didn't make another phone call from your cell until the next day.
We were going to order some food. I called for the number at Bucci's.
What, then you got fooled from the peanuts at the bar?
Well, I was the only one that was hungry, so I figured, what the hell?
Lenny's with Davey.
No, we never planned on going to Atlantic City. Martin was just going to get the girls.
And bring them to the hotel?
That's right. Like I told you before, that reporter guy ruined our plans.
See, thing is, David, last I heard, they have girls in Atlantic City.
Yeah, they also have scum-sucking reporters.
When you're good, you're good. I checked. You even called and made room reservations at the Taj. Just to throw everybody off track, right?
I don't know about that. Martin takes care of all that stuff.
There's one thing that pisses me off to no end is when a suspect confesses and then some defense attorney comes at me with all this Fifth Amendment crap.
I didn't hear me confess. Yet.
With Davey.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, right. You were at the hotel bar.
Until we snuck up to the room?
You and Martin Stanley and your cousin, right?
That's right.
Lenny leans closer to him.
Thing is, if Kev was with you at the bar, how could he call Martin's cell phone from his house? Wrong answer, Davey. You should have said it was the maid who called.
With Martin.
Lucci's, huh?
Yeah, it's a 3-star restaurant.
They must have one hell of a veal piccata.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they do.
I wouldn't think in a place like that would deliver.
I'm a good customer.
Well, you must be to get them to deliver from 23rd and 1st all the way up to 63rd and 3rd.
Like I said, it was mood anyway. I was the only one who was hungry.
That's one explanation. Another one is that you saw Norman with his neck snapped. You freaked out. You dialed 911. Kevin made you hang up.
Martin looks down.
Then which story sounds more plausible to you?
With Davey.
I didn't kill anybody.
Well, that's up to the jury now, Davey. Lucky for Kev, he's a ball player, huh? Juries love ball players. I mean, you saw what happened with OJ. So now it's just you, Davey. A hick with a bad right arm. You got the DP in North Dakota? DP, that doesn't mean designated player. It means death penalty. Because we have it here.
His chin quivers.
Damn it, I just want to play some blackjack.
He shakes his head.
Hadn't screwed it all up.
He killed Norman Pratt.
He nods.
Me and Martin's just helped him dump the body.
Lenny pats him on the shoulder. Van Buren and Eddie are watching.
So I guess blood isn't thicker than water.
Well, neither is 10%. Stanley said the same thing. They got to Salibi's and found Norman dead.
And you still want his rookie card? Arrest him.
Lenny walks up. Later, Kevin is jogging. As he approaches his building, Lenny is standing out of sight. Kevin walks up and Eddie steps in front of him.
Did you find out who killed Norman?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we did.
Hey, what the hell's going on?
2 outs, bottom of the ninth, and you just struck out, pal.
Kevin Salibi, you're under arrest for the murder of Norman Pratt. You have the right to remain silent.
Later, in a courtroom.
Docket number 39867, People v. Kevin Salibi, Martin Stanley, and David Arcus. Charges are murder in the first degree and conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree.
Let's talk, please.
Not guilty.
Not guilty.
Not guilty.
Ms. Sutherland,
the people request remand, Your Honor.
And I'm sure you have something to say on that matter, Mr. Fenwick?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Due to my client's celebrity, he's hardly a flight risk. In addition...
Which one's the hot shot?
Kevin Salibi happens to be...
Indicted for murder, famous face or not. Bail is set at $500,000 for all three. Mr. Salibi, you should have dove for that ball against the Sox in 99.
Fenwick stares at the judge. Later, with D.A. Arthur Branch.
So is this kid guilty?
His friends say he is.
Well, they say it in court.
If we draw up the charges to accessories after the fact, no time.
Done. That'll put the Salibi thing to rest, no hustle or bustle.
You want me to deal with Salibi?
The whole deck.
Oh, I see. If you can hit a ball, you get special treatment?
That's right, Serena. By the jury. I'll give you Marsha Clark's phone number if you want a second opinion.
How low?
How long are we on motive?
Well, we think that the victim was asking Salibi for money to keep his steroid use out of the papers.
Blackmail's good. Two witnesses. Fenwick will grab man one and run.
Later, with Fenwick and Kevin.
Now, this is all very generous of you, Jack, but you gotta know I can't accept it.
Actually, Alan, I thought you'd see man one as manna from heaven.
Not considering my client's status.
When will people get off of OJ? That verdict was jury nullification, pure and simple.
The juice never crossed my mind, Miss Sutherland. I was thinking more about Ray Lewis, all-pro linebacker for the Ravens, who was knee-deep in a homicide. Not only was he acquitted, he was voted MVP.
We have two witnesses.
They had about 50. Do you realize that after Allen Iverson was caught running around Philly with a gun, the sales of his jerseys and shoes increased tenfold?
On the other hand, Ray Carruth is in maximum security for the rest of his life. Athletes are not immune.
I agree. But you see, Kevin has one thing that Carruth didn't have.
You?
That too. Kevin here is suffering from steroid-induced psychosis.
That's like saying a drunk driver is not responsible for vehicular homicide because he was drunk.
That's one argument. I'll send you my expert's report. You have you guys spend some time with Kevin, then we'll talk.
Office of Dr. Emil Skoda. Kevin is wringing his hands.
That must be something. Thousands of people screaming for you.
Or against you.
Yeah, how does that feel?
You don't hear it, you focus.
On a ball coming at you at close to 100 miles an hour?
Yeah, that's all you see. It's like you're in a tunnel, you, the pitcher, and the ball. Nothing else is there, nothing else exists.
Too bad it can't be like that outside the ballpark.
I get by.
Actually, you don't, Kevin. That's why you're here.
The guy got in my face!
He clenches his fists, then rubs his forehead as Skoda watches.
You talking about Norman Pratt? Kevin, are you always this tense?
No. Maybe, I don't know.
Why Norman?
Do you know what it's like to get to the show, man? Do you know how hard it is to stay there?
Would the world end if you couldn't?
Yes. You don't know. My old man, if I didn't... He used to have to shovel horse manure on someone else's ranch 12 hours a day for 40 years. Now you tell me what man deserves...
That's his problem, Kevin, not yours.
Well, I got to the show, man. And he got to put down his shovel and hold his head up high.
And Norman Pratt was going to take that all away.
Kevin sets his jaw and looks down. Later, Skoda is at a restaurant with Jack and Serena.
To be accurate, they're called anabolic androgenic steroids. They're synthetic derivatives of testosterone.
Which hardly makes you psychotic.
No comment.
Naturally occurring testosterone triggers male maturation and helps retain proteins, which aid in muscle growth.
So far, I don't hear anything about insanity.
Okay, most normal men produce less than 10 milligrams a day. Kevin Salibi was taking over 10 times that.
And that affects his behavior.
Professional athletes are aggressive to begin with. Toss a little fuel on that fire.
He was being blackmailed. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Knowing what you're doing and not being able to prevent it are two different things. There's actually a clinical term for it, roid rage.
And he conveniently told you all about how he was suffering from it.
I don't think this kid's faking it, Jack.
Are you saying he was truly unable to control his actions?
Look, there was a lot of pressure on him.
There's a lot of pressure on me.
Yeah, you're not injecting yourself with chemicals twice a day. Look, I'll testify that he was legally sane, but was he what the masses would consider normal? Not a chance.
You know that far and away the most common users of steroids are teenagers?
Kids have to get bigger to get on the team, to get the scholarship, to get drafted.
So the league just turns a blind eye.
More home runs means more tickets sold.
Yeah, even if the law is broken?
Special rules for special talents.
Well, the upside is that their testicles shrink.
A woman hands Serena an envelope. She takes a document from it.
Oh, it's Fenwick's expert's report written by Dr. Sarah Hoffman.
Kid's got money, might as well go with the best. Let me guess, 100 pages.
Serena turns to the back of the report.
Something's wrong here. This shouldn't... Somebody from Fenwick's office screwed up and attached an inter-office memo.
Money doesn't always buy you confidence.
She reads the memo.
I spoke with Douglas Carroll, and he has no intention of testifying.
Who's he?
I don't know, but there's more. I believe this will allow us to pursue our original theory of the case.
Jack sits up.
Is there an address for Mr. Carroll?
Living Out Magazine, 60 Prince Street.
It's about living life. It's about having fun in the city, you know, out loud and proud.
New York Magazine for gay people.
Mm-hmm. People love to read about who's seeing whom and who's doing what. Occasionally we have dish on celebrities.
As a matter of fact, that's exactly why I'm here, Mr. Carroll.
Sorry. ADAs don't rate.
Carol walks away from Serena.
I'm here about Kevin Salibi.
Am I supposed to know him?
The baseball player?
Oh, I'm sorry. Baseball bores me. Now, Hoops, on the other hand, that's...
Kevin's on trial for murder.
That's too bad.
Your name came up in the course of our investigation.
My name?
Yeah, it seems that Salibi's counsel would like to keep you out of the courtroom.
You know, it must be another Carol. There's a Marty over on,
Why don't you stop playing games with me? Because I can get detectives here in less than 15 minutes. You want to know what I think? I think you and Norman Pratt were blackmailing Kevin Salibi. I think that
No. I would never do anything to hurt Kevin or his precious little career.
He looks down. Later, Serena is with Jack.
The publisher of the magazine was his lover, Jack.
Was?
They had different views on freedom of expression. Anyway, back when they were closer, they were in Norman's limo. He recognized Mr. Carroll.
He started blackmailing Salibi. Jack!
Fenwick walks up.
I'm glad I found you.
Changed your mind on that deal, did you?
Hardly. The expert report I sent you, there might have been a memo attached.
A very interesting one.
You read it?
And we talked to Mr. Carroll.
Shame on you.
I should say the same to you, Alan.
Well, I didn't read your confidential work product, Jack. That's a no-no. You use it. I don't know how many canons it violates. Lucky for you, there isn't a judge in this state who will let you make that mistake.
He hands Jack a document. Jack and Serena walk away. Chambers of Judge Walter Bradley.
It's a clear-cut situation, Judge. If Mr. McCoy will just go back to the notes he took in evidence, he'll see that attorney work product is sacred.
Then why did you send it to me?
You don't know already, Mr. McCoy, I'm not big on sarcasm.
As the Supreme Court said in Hickman, the work product doctrine is critical to a lawyer's ability to render professional services.
Practically, the rule prevents one lawyer from intruding upon opposing counsel's legal strategizing. The people did not intrude in this case. Mr. Fenwick delivered his strategy by messenger.
By attorney error. My client shouldn't suffer because of my associate's negligence.
He's right, Mr. McCoy.
The Second Circuit held that the rule protects against disclosure of mental impressions, conclusions, opinions, legal theories only. Not facts. The people do not plan on using counsel's theories, only the fact that Mr. Carroll exists.
Nice, Jack. My brother-in-law is a barber. Tomorrow I'll send you a whole bunch of hairs to split.
My judicial sarcasm rule applies to both sides of the aisle, Mr. Fenwick.
I apologize, Your Honor, but the memo clearly expresses my associate's opinion of how to try the case. To wit, in my opinion, it is crucial to keep Douglas Carroll from testifying.
Game, set, match. Any reference to Mr. Carroll and or his particular relationship to the defendant is inadmissible, Mr. McCoy.
Later, Jack and Serena are in Arthur's office.
Fenwick should have known better than to put something like that down on paper.
It wasn't Fenwick, it was his associate.
And if that one ever knocks on our door begging for work, politely escort him to the elevator.
This has to be a first, a lawyer's negligence benefiting his case.
I don't see why. We had a case before we knew Salibi was gay, we still have a case now. Since when do we need a motive?
Jack looks at Arthur and shrugs. Supreme Court, Trial Part 62. Davey is on the stand.
Me and Martin were at the Scott House over on the east side. Kev was supposed to pick us up around 7 o'clock.
That would be in his limo?
That's right. To take us to Atlantic City.
How did your plans change?
Kev never showed.
Why not?
He called Martin on his cell. He was freaked. Martin couldn't calm down, so he gave the phone to me. I've known Kev my whole life. But I never heard him like that. I mean... scared me.
What did you do?
We took a cab down to Kev's place. I have a key, so we just went in, and Kev, he was just so jacked up, he could hardly talk.
What else did you see, Mr. Arcus?
I didn't know what to do, so I went to get Kev a glass of water. And in the kitchen, there was the driver.
You're referring to Norman Pratt?
That's right. He was slumped over the table. I could tell he was dead.
Did you call the police?
Martin started to, but I stopped him.
Why?
Kev's my cousin.
He looks down.
what we did was wrong. When Kev finally calmed down, we loaded the body into the limo and dumped it into the park.
In the gallery, Susie sobs.
And then we left the limo over on the west side and went to the hotel.
To establish an alibi.
That's right.
Jack walks back to his seat, and Fenwick stands.
Did your cousin tell you what happened in the kitchen?
Not really.
So he didn't tell you why he killed Mr. Pratt?
Kevin watches Davey closely.
No.
No more questions.
Later, Dr. Skoda is on the stand.
Yes, it's possible that when placed in a threatening situation, an abuser of anabolic steroids can become exceptionally violent.
Would that be a psychotic reaction, Doctor?
Psychosis? No. Psychotic disorders are characterized by an extreme impairment of a person's ability to understand reality. Typical symptoms are hallucinations and or delusions.
Did Mr. Salibi tell you, for example, that he heard voices telling him to kill Norman Pratt?
No. He may have had an overly violent reaction because of the abundance of synthetic chemicals in his body, but in the end, he merely lost his temper.
So, in your analysis, there was an actual inciting event as opposed to an imaginary one.
That's correct.
Thank you, Doctor.
Did my client tell you what that inciting event was?
Not specifically, no.
But you did ask him, didn't you?
Of course, but he refused to answer.
Isn't it true that a mark of a psychotic disorder is an incorrect emotional response to ordinary situations?
Yes, but inappropriate responses are not necessarily psychotic.
Killing for no motive whatsoever, Doctor. Would you consider that psychotic?
In certain cases.
The jury is watching him.
No more questions.
The people call Roger Ellery.
Objection, Your Honor.
On what grounds?
I get to ask that question, Miss McCoy.
Chambers, Your Honor.
10-minute recess.
Kevin looks down.
Ellery on the people's witness list or not, Mr. McCoy?
Front and center, Your Honor.
But that's not the issue.
What is that?
His testimony is inadmissible.
Well, who the hell is he?
Dr. Ellery sold steroids to Norman Pratt, who sold them to Kevin Salibi.
You better not be wasting my time here, Mr. Fenwick.
I wouldn't think of it. Since an element of our defense is that Mr. Salibi abused steroids, it would be redundant to offer testimony that he actually bought them from someone.
Redundant, yes. Inadmissible, no.
Come on, Jack. We both know what you're doing here.
Perhaps one of you would explain it to me?
Gladly. In order to counter our defense of steroid-induced psychosis, Mr. McCoy is planning to offer evidence of motive.
That's a very good plan, Mr. Fenwick.
Yes, it would be if the prosecution had some reasonable basis in fact for offering it. Clearly, Mr. McCoy is planning to argue that Mr. Pratt was blackmailing my client.
He was.
That's right, about his being gay, not about his steroid use. Ergo, offering evidence to the latter would, in effect, be arguing something that Mr. McCoy knows is false, and we all know that would be tantamount to suborning perjury.
I can present facts, and the jury can draw their own conclusions.
Rules may be there to be broken, Mr. McCoy, but not in my courtroom. Defense's objection, Mr. Ellery's testimony is sustained.
Serena looks at Jack. Later, they walk into his office.
I think we split on the experts.
Yeah, well, with no motive, my money is on the jury's love for apple pie mom and baseball.
We have two witnesses who said he did it.
For no reason at all, which means he must be legally nuts. Let's face it, Jack, Salibi's not going to go to prison.
I did what I thought was necessary to put him there.
Which also includes arguing a false motive.
Implying is not arguing, and it certainly isn't subornation of perjury.
Well, it's not exactly ethical either. There are rules, Jack, you are knowingly going to break them. Look, I think that Salibi should be convicted as much as you do, but I don't think that we have the right to pick and choose which laws we're going to follow and which ones we're going to ignore.
She walks out and Jack watches her go. Supreme Court, Trial Part 62. Fenwick is addressing the jury.
Rugby, North Dakota. I'll bet most of you can't pick that out on a map. But that's where Kevin Salibi was born and raised. And most probably would have lived and died if not for his special talent. Unfortunately,
In the universe that was Kevin's destiny, talent wasn't enough. 25 players on a team, 30 major league teams, that's 750 men in the entire world. Kevin had to be bigger, he had to be stronger, he had to be quicker. He heard whispers around the clubhouse of a magic potion, a potion that would make him the best ball player he could possibly be. It would keep him from shoveling horse manure like his old man back home. So he took the potion. And he became bigger, and he became stronger, and he became quicker. And he also became sick. I'm not talking about the kind of sick that would put him on the disabled list. I'm talking about a mental disease that would cause him to kill a friend for no reason whatsoever. Luckily, in this country, we don't put men like that in prison.
The jury is watching him. He walks back to the defense table, and Jack approaches.
Let's be clear that just because we couldn't state with certainty in this courtroom here today just what Mr. Salibi's motive was, it doesn't mean that he didn't have one. And just because the defense counsel has presented you with a touching story, it doesn't mean that it's the whole story. Mr. Fenwick omitted the part about his client admitting to killing Norman Pratt. He left out the part about his client enlisting his friends to help him cover up the crime. He omitted the part about his client trying to evade the consequences of his act.
Susie is watching from the gallery.
Just in case anyone has forgotten, taking steroids is illegal. It's cheating. Kevin Salibi didn't care.
Jack turns and looks at Kevin.
Why would he? After all, it isn't really cheating if you don't get caught. But this time, he did get caught. He cheated at his chosen profession. He cheated at life. And now he's trying to cheat the justice system. But you have to ask yourselves, is it really justice if it's obtained fraudulently?
Jack looks at Serena.
Can cheating become its own defense for murder?
Susie looks at the jury. Jack walks back to his seat as Kevin stares straight ahead, then looks down. Supreme Court, Trial Part 62.
Has the jury reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
On the sole count of the indictment, murder in the first degree, how do you find?
We find the defendant, Kevin Salibi, guilty.
Defendant remanded. This case is adjourned for 3 weeks while sentencing is decided.
Susie mouths the words thank you to Jack and Serena. Kevin is led out of the courtroom. Later, with Arthur.
So the rumor is Fenwick's going to appeal. He's claiming the jury convicted against the weight of the evidence.
Yeah, well, if he manages to get a retrial, I bet he changes gears and argues that Salibi was being blackmailed about his sexual preference.
Not a chance.
Why? Because being a cheater is more sympathetic than being gay?
I can see you've never been in a pro locker room.
Arthur walks out.
Hell of a closing, Jack.
I've got nothing to apologize for.
That's right. Special rules for special talents.
Serena walks out with a smile. The preceding story is fictional. No actual...